Hour two, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game, brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keys are here with you on this Thursday morning. Predators assistant coach Todd Richards will join us coming up at 7:15. Pro Football Hall of Fame finalist Patrick Willis will be with us at 7:30. So looking forward to that. Charles Robinson from 8 to 8:30 talking Titans and all things NFL. So the introductory press conference from Brian Callahan coming up later today, Joe Rex Road. What are we excited to hear about from Brian Callahan as he introduces himself to Titans fans and media today? Is Joe Rex Road there?
Hello? Hello. Decided, Nick didn't want me to be part of the show anymore.
Wow. I just totally cut you off.
This was a mute that for once was not on me.
To be fair, Joe had the tape and advertisement, so sorry about that.
Keezer's just on one today.
Nick's hatred for this show, I swear.
Hatred for the show.
Palpable.
Hey, I was listening to you.
You can feel it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. It's like the comment I sent you guys from Jim Comperoni about Jim Harbaugh yesterday.
We'll get to that later. Yes.
I'm not that bad.
Yeah. Yeah, that's some serious hatred. What am I excited to hear about? You know, that's a good question.
Thank you.
Well, you know, my first question is, so Brian, who has final say? That's my question. Brian, who has final say, and will this be a collaboration? No. By the way, speaking of that presser, there is some the last press conference left a bad taste in some people's mouths, and I have to say I was part of the problem. If you remember the Rand Carthon presser after they fired Vrabel, there was a whole lot of interrupting and yelling. Actually, a couple of times, I really, really yelled to get my question in over someone else.
I remember.
I kind of feel bad about it. But, it was one of those things where it's like there's actually a lot of questions that I want to make sure get asked. And I don't know. Trey Avery, do you think that, I'm like, I don't have time for this stuff. I got to interrupt a little bit, you know. That was pretty good, right? That was
pretty good. It was pretty solid.
You read the Ren. Love you, Glennon. But I haven't really. I mean, I think Levis is a big part. Is a big thing today.
Sure.
What do you think, Levis? What was your? And the thing is, it's not like the Bengals were seriously evaluating Will Levis last year because they have a quarterback.
Exactly.
So, but still, I mean, he has thoughts on him. I'm sure. You still look at the quarterbacks. I mean, you still have to be apprised of everything significant coming into the league from a talent perspective. So that, his philosophy, I think just the football stuff. And I am excited about talking about football. Obviously, staff questions are also very interesting and relevant right now. The question of Bill Callahan, and I don't even know at this point what – would Brian be able to say it? Maybe like, yeah, I just don't have any answers on staff, on right. staff situations. But I think it's a good question to ask, where they might be with that. And defensively, how he views that, does he have a type, does he have a style, a philosophy, or is it like he's out there looking for the best defensive mind he can find, and then that person sets that, things like that. I mean, those are, the football stuff, like what's the football going to be like? But it is. It's funny because 6 years ago, Mike Vrabel was introduced after a firing that I didn't like of Mike Mularkey, and there was a lot of question. Mike Vrabel, first-time head coach, 1 year as a coordinator, wasn't good. But most of the questions in his intro presser were about Mariota, were about how are you going to get the most out of Mariota that last year this coaching staff could not.
Yeah.
But it'll be, I think, Levis – is probably where I start, just how he views him, just what he says, how much, and look, from a media perspective, but it's also from a fan perspective. I've seen a lot of interviews with Brian Callahan, talked to a lot of people who know him really well. I think for us, that's media fans, I think we're going to be getting a lot more information and explanation of things than Vrabel wanted to give us. So, I mean, I think just the way the presser goes and sort of the depth of information, that's my hope. I mean, I have high expectations. I don't want to get disappointed. I think we're going to have quote unquote better pressers with him just because, you know, he's a little bit better with some of the media things than Vrabel was.
I'm interested to hear what he has to say on like the wide receiver part of this and just the how much of a difference like the value placed on wide receiver is in today's game. And I think his situation in Cincinnati was such an interesting example of it because I mean the obvious answer, Joe, is like if you're picking an offensive line or a wide receiver, what's more important to have? I mean the obvious answer is you want to have both. And the Bengals have been trying like mad to fix their offensive line to the point where it's acceptable. And certainly their offensive line now is much better than it was a couple of years ago. But they did, you know, going back to that Ja'Marr Chase pick, they had the opportunity to pick, you know, two really good players, right? Ja'Marr Chase at wide receiver, Penei Sewell at tackle, and they went with the wide receiver. Now, that wide receiver had also played college football with their quarterback and had a pretty good, you know, connection there. So how much did that play into it? But just his philosophy on the wide receiver position and, you know, how much of a point of emphasis that's going to be for this team to bring in some playmaking guys. Like, I think that's going to be interesting to hear his thoughts on wide receiver, the way he wants to attack defenses in the passing game and put up some points. I mean, Titans fans are starving for points, man. We're starving for the time that you can get back to 30 points. Hopefully that happens sooner rather than later under Brian Callahan.
Yeah, well, for sure. And so people are going to – I mean, again, people are already, just like Kaharski, overreacting yesterday, you know, to the quote about passing – passing offenses. I saw Terry McCormick had a tweet, you know, that the Titans have yet to have a 4,000-yard passer. And obviously you can go all around the league and find – I think he said, like, you know, Kirk Cousins has seven of them. But obviously you can find a lot of 4,000-yard passers in recent years in the NFL. That used to be a ridiculous number to try to hit. So that's all good. I think that is a really interesting question that you have, and it's a good one on the draft. I think the answer is – you go with the best available. Ja'Marr Chase, like you said, he played to Burrow. Also, Ja'Marr Chase is a singular talent. I mean, Ja'Marr Chase
is a freak.
Yeah. And so I wouldn't take that as every time that, you know, Brian Callahan encountered that choice, he would go receiver. But, yeah, that's an interesting one to go into because both of them have turned out to be great players.
Jackson on the text line, Joe, for you, says, Joe, ask him if his daddy is going to join him on the staff and make sure you use the word daddy. This is Jackson on the text line.
Coach, you going to hire your daddy, coach? You bringing your daddy in here?
I don't think he's going to be able to say anything about that given the contractual situation, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think we're going to get answers on that today. I'm going to stick with what I'm saying, which is the Cleveland Browns would, again, be – a joke if they tried to block this. I mean, like, you know, it's like Ben Stiller. It's like Ben Stiller and Happy Gilmore, you know. You get in there and, like, go make that wallet, you know. Like, no, you will be coaching offensive line, Bill Callahan. I mean, it's get out of here. I don't buy it, but we'll see.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Predators assistant coach Todd Richards. Preds on the road tonight in Minnesota. We'll get his thoughts on the way the team is playing and the three-game road trip coming up. That is next. Tune in to 93.3 Classic Hits Saturday night for MTSU men's basketball. The Blue Raiders are at home taking on FIU with pregame beginning at 4:30, tip-off at 5 o'clock. Coverage also available on the 93.3 Classic app and at 93.3 Classic Hits. com. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Thursday morning. Preds back in action tonight on the road, taking on the Minnesota Wild. And to help us talk about that, we go to our 1025 the game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Predators assistant coach Todd Richards. Todd, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys.
Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, Todd. So As you look at the way your team is playing right now, heading into this game tonight against Minnesota, what stands out to you about your group and where you guys are at this point in the season, approaching the All-Star break?
Well, I think you always want things to be a little bit better, but I think that the way that the team has played, we're giving ourselves a chance. We're in games, giving ourselves a chance to win a game every night, whether it's our goaltending, whether it's our how we've defended as a team, and power play special teams have been pretty good. So we're giving ourselves a chance to win hockey games. Now the one thing that we have to get better at is just closing out games. You know, in Arizona you lose by one goal. Really, the Florida game was a one goal game. I know what the final ended up 4-1, but there's two empty nets. But those are the games where we have to find ways to manufacture points and get out of games with points. And that's, in a lot of ways, that's how you find your way into the playoffs.
So Todd, Jeremy Lauzon, guy out there just hitting everything in sight. He's becoming a little bit more of a factor in making plays. A lot of talk about, I know Andrew Brunette sent some very, you know, encouraging things about him. What are you seeing from him? Where is he on his development right now? And what's the ceiling for him?
You know what? I think we're seeing, you know, we're scratching the surface of what he can be in the NHL. You know, I happened to be here in Nashville when we acquired him, and I think he's really started to blossom as a player. You know, he's big, he's strong. I don't think you realize how big he is until you're standing next to him and just his size. But the one thing that he does as a big a hockey player, he moves extremely well. He's got very good feet on the ice. And then I think just the way that this season has gone and obviously the praise that he's gotten from people around the team, but also people away from the team in the way that he played has given him the confidence. And, you know, just like anything in today's game, you got to skate in today's game. And the one thing, again, for a big guy, he's got good feet. His lateral movement allows him to close quickly on guys and deliver those punishing hits. I've been around this game a lot, and you see, you know, certain physical players, and he is the one guy that you talk about. He hits with his body. You know, he doesn't hit. He doesn't stop. He doesn't, you know, close the guys and kind of – some guys can lose that momentum of – you know, right before the point of impact, and he doesn't. But when he closes and he hits guys, they definitely feel it. Now, the other thing in how he defends with his feet, the other thing is it allows him to be an offensive player. You know, he's not a Roman Josi, but he can definitely get up the ice and he can contribute. And again, I think he's finding ways to do that. And I think we're just kind of scratching the surface with him there.
So Todd, Juuso Parsonen sent down to Milwaukee, and you know, obviously a young player, a seventh-round pick who got called up early last season and has been with your club pretty much ever since, even though there have been some injuries tossed in there too. But what was the message from the coaching staff to Parsonen and as you guys sent him back to Milwaukee?
Oh, well, we really believe he's an NHL player. It's, you know, these things happen with young players. You know, not everybody's is road to the NHL is, and most roads, you know, are not literally clean roads. There's a lot of bumps in them. There's a lot of potholes in them. And, you just got to find the way there. And we are very high on Parse and what he is as a person and as a player. And, you know, finding those consistencies. And sometimes in young players, you don't want them in the lineup, out of the lineup, in the lineup, out of the lineup. You want your young players to play. And really, this is just about him and his future and again, getting back to his game and helping him to try to find his game. But he's going to be an NHL player, and we're really excited about him, and we're excited about his future in Nashville.
So, Todd, you mentioned, you know, finding those, you know, finding a way late in games. I know – obviously, you guys have also done that a fair amount this year. Teams go through ups and downs, but when you get into a situation where you are now, like what do you work on as a coaching staff to try to you know, get the best out of those key moments in games?
Well, I you know, a lot of times when you you know, you get to this point in the season, you're halfway through the season, you know, it's not about the conditioning part. It's not about the, you know, any of that anymore. A lot of times in the rigors of the middle of the season, it's I think in a lot of ways, it's trying to give the players every tool necessary so that they can have success. And I'm talking a little bit on an individual scale, because you're coaching an individual, but you're also coaching as a team. And some of it is just that positive, you know, mindset. And this is where the season gets hard. And, you know, every team is starting to amp up their game a little bit. You know, we have a little bit of a target on our back based on where we are in the standings. And that's a great spot to be in. But right now the coaching is really kind of like fine tuning and again, trying to set the players up, put them in the best position individually, put them in the best position collectively as a group, so we can go out and we can get their best performances each and every night.
Preds assistant coach Todd Richards with us here on Robbie and Rexer. Todd, on the offensive side of things, obviously the Forsberg, O'Reilly, Nyquist line has been dynamite for you guys all season long. And Burnett's talked about trying to get more guys to fill that role and help out in secondary scoring, and the confidence just not really being there with that right now. So how do you, as a coaching staff, kind of related to that last question, work on confidence? Is it something you can work on, or is that something that just has to come naturally throughout the course of a game?
Well, it's something that we can work on as a coaching staff. You know, whether it's individually with players, or again, you're doing video as a group. You know, certainly working on individual skills, and we have some young players up front. So, you know, we talked about you know, Parse going down to Milwaukee, and it wasn't a punishment or anything like that. It's to help him and hopefully help him find his game, get some confidence, and you know, because we saw what he could do, you know, from the previous year, and they're just getting that consistency in his game. But it's no different up front with some of the other players too, and our young players, you know, that have come up last year and contributed last year, and for whatever reason right now can't get into a rhythm of scoring. You know, they can contribute here or there, but they aren't like what you said, the Forsberg, O'Reilly, Nyquist line. We need to find, not that our lines have to be like that, but we need to find some more contributions from them up front. The other thing is, I think as a group of defensemen on the back end, we need more from them a little bit too, and just how they can contribute. Not necessarily talking about them like finishing plays and scoring goals, but can they start plays from their own end? Can they help drive plays through the neutral zone? Can they keep plays alive in the offensive zone? So it gives our you know, second, third, fourth lines more opportunities in the offensive zone so we can score. But there's things that we can do. You know, our skills coach and offensive coaches, Derek McKenzie and Dan Heinold, have done a good job in working with guys. Actually, Brew does a really good job, too, at the end of practice, taking the group of forwards and going down and just working on things. It has been a little bit frustrating. There's no doubt about that. But it's not from a lack of effort or a lack of want from the guys up front. We just can't find that click that connects and we get that push from them. Some of it is just youth, a little bit of inexperience. That is a little bit of the growing pains that you go through as a young team and a young group up front.
Todd, Milwaukee doing really well, young by AHL standards. As you talk through this, as you just laid out for us, are there potential answers there that you guys are discussing who may get a shot here at some point in the near future?
Well, it's certainly something that you talked about as a group, and Bruno's done a good job keeping in contact with Carl Taylor down there and Scott Nickel, our assistant general manager, who's you know, has his thumbprints all over Milwaukee and what they're doing down there. So there's always those conversations that go on. That's above my pay grade. I just kind of, those are the conversations that I think Brew has with Barry Trotz and Scott Nickel, and, but every organization, you know, is doing that. And certainly we're trying to find solutions to the certain I'm not even going to say problems that we have, but it is the issue that we have is that secondary scoring. But to credit to Carl and his coaching staff and Scott and everybody around that have brought in the players there, that they're having lots of success down in Milwaukee, and that only makes things great for us up here. It's a good problem to have when you got good players down there and you're deciding whether to bring guys up and give them opportunities.
Well, Todd, thanks so much for taking time to be with us this morning. Good luck tonight against Minnesota, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys.
Todd. Absolutely. Preds assistant coach Todd Richards, our guest on Robbie and Rex Show. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Patrick Willis, Pro Football Hall of Famer. He joined Paul Kuharsky and myself for a conversation earlier this week. And if you're a Tennessee Vols fan, you're not going to want to miss the way that his college career almost panned out. That's a big missed opportunity for Tennessee. We'll get into that and more with Patrick Willis up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com. And we are pleased to welcome into the program legendary San Francisco 49er and legendary Tennessean Patrick Willis to the program. Patrick, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. Happy to be here.
Really happy to have you with us. And, you know, Patrick, your career, it was so much fun to watch. Five-time All-Pro, seven-time Pro Bowler with the 49ers, a Pro Football Hall of Fame finalist again this year. When you hear that and when you kind of think about being a finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, what comes to mind?
Man, just the chills, you know, it's almost, it's like, you know, hearing the possibility that you can, you know, be drafted. You know, I can't say that I know that I envision myself being, you know, I don't want to say not envision myself being a Hall of Famer. Obviously, I thought about it, and when I went, the way I went about the play, I tried, but to actually be a finalist now, going on my third time, you know, it's really real, and I'm just truly honored and thankful for everyone who's involved in this process.
Do you worry about the shorter career hurting your case, or do you look at guys, recent inductees like Kenny Easley, Terrell Davis, Tony Boselli, and think that an 8-season career isn't that short anymore in the eyes of the selection committee, and that it probably won't hold you back?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. Obviously, when I was, you know, when the time came, you know, it had crossed my mind a little bit. However, at the same time, I also had this way of thinking about it as in, like, you know, I can't really, I can only control what I can control and focus on what I can focus on. And it's no different in life. You know, sometimes we want to stay around longer in places that it's time for us to go, and sometimes we make it worse. And for whatever reason, in my core, in my gut, it was time to move on. And I say, you know, at the end of the day, I'm going to go about this the same way that I went about it when I first started. I said, you never know how long you have to play, but just in case it's one day or it's 5 years or 10, when that time comes, I just want to be able to look back and say, you know what, I gave it everything I had, and That's what you can grade me on. And so, yeah, I just hope that, you know, if it's a test and you only have four questions, then you don't have room to get it wrong. And that's how I kind of felt about with my football career, meaning that, man, the NFL for me has still not for long. And so just in case, you know, it's not long, I just want to make sure that I give it everything I have. And we shall see.
Did the toe injury that forced you to shut it down, Patrick, did that have implications beyond football for you? Was it a problem in daily life? Is it a problem still?
Well, obviously, yes, that was a major factor. That was one of the biggest things that, you know, I thought about early on. I was like, man, you know, when I no longer have that passion to give it everything I have, then I'll step away from the game and figure it out. And it was just a conglomerate of things, you know, from the injuries. And I just took it all into consideration. Like I said, that same voice that told me when I was young that said, you know, you're going to do this, was the same voice that I heard saying, Pat, you know, it's okay. It's okay. You know, and I kept hearing that Bob Marley voice in my head said, what's the gain in the world but lose your soul in the process? And I was getting to the point where it was hard to get up in the morning time. I was getting grumpy in the locker room. I was spending more time just praying and asking God to just give me strength so I can go out there and get it done. And I just felt like when it started getting to the point where I'm begging to just have the energy to go out there and play at my best, I knew it was time to figure out the next phase. That's how it came about.
Patrick, is it a thing anymore, or is it something that healed up in time?
Yeah, I said when you know it's a lot to it, but a lot of people don't know that my right toe was just as bad, and I never forget when I left the doc and he said, you know, you're gonna have to come back in and get your other toe done eventually. I don't know how long you have left in it, and it was just at that point where I said, you know what, man, like I've seen guys come back. You know, crippled, they're talking to us and they have some great stories, but man, they fragile, they barely can walk, and they only in their 50s and 60s. You know, what's the point of having, you know, what's the point of working so hard and trying to make a good living for yourself just to get older and be crippled and can't really enjoy it? And that's for me, you know, growing up the way I grew up, you know, I said, man, I'm gonna give everything I have so I can kind of have the quality of life that I want to enjoy, you know, as I get older. And so taking all that into consideration, yeah, that was a choice. And then now, you know, it's I don't have to take on 300-pound guys anymore. You know, I don't have to, you know, worry about them scat back. So it's not as much, but I can feel it at times when I'm working out, even now I still have to use CBD and cream on my toes as I did when I was playing. And so, yeah, it's still aggravate a little bit, but it's nothing near as much as when it was. You know, you had to go out there and perform it against A1 top athletes every day, practice and or games.
Patrick Willis with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Patrick, I want to go back to your college days. Obviously, you end up having a phenomenal career at Ole Miss. But a lot of Tennessee fans look back and say, man, can you imagine if Patrick Willis was a Tennessee Volunteer? And I know you grew up in the state. Was Tennessee ever on your radar? Did they ever get in touch recruiting you? What was your experience like as you know with Philip Fulmer and that staff? And I guess what do you say to Tennessee fans who are really disappointed you didn't end up as a member of the Tennessee Vols?
oh man, what a story! You know, I'll say God works in mysterious ways. You know, oftentimes they say tell God your plans and he'll laugh at them. And for me, I thought, you know, growing up in Tennessee, you know, I grew up earlier on. I was big Ohio State fan, Nebraska fan, but of course you get to high middle school and high school and you start realizing like Tennessee is the ball. It's the America's team, and it's Tennessee is ball country. And I was like, man, in order to go to where I have seen myself being, I got to go to the Tennessee Vols, because I knew that they had put out a plethora of athletes. And I knew that you can go up there and pretty much not even start and still get opportunity to try out in pro day and they'll still take you just because of the recognition of the Vols. However, you know, I remember going on my unofficial visits to Tennessee my three or four times, maybe five times, and I just remember them never saying anything to me. I mean, no matter how good my games were the night before I was going there, I never heard them say, you know what, Willis, we watched your film, we heard you play well, like, keep on balling, you know, we're interested in it was to the point to where I remember my dad saying, boy, a closed mouth never get fed. And I never forget, I went up to the coach after my last visit there, because it take about 5 hours to get up there. And I got up there, and it was the same thing again. So I said, you know what, I'm going to ask Coach Berry. And I said, Coach, now I don't understand. How come nobody is, you know, having a talk with me? I haven't been on an unofficial visit. I've been trying to show you all that I'm really interested in being here. And he pretty much told me, he said, you know what, we're recruiting two other guys, and we don't know if you're going to make your ACT score. And that right away, I mean, it hurt, because I was like, man, if you just knew how hard I'm working on this, if you just knew how hard I'm grinding, like I'm gonna get it done, I'm gonna make it happen, like just believe in me. And pretty much it was almost as if like they say, you know what, our attention is elsewhere. And at the end of the day, you just want to go somewhere where you want it, where you welcome it, and you can make it at home. And I just said, you know what, I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna focus on what I can focus on, and that's continue to play the best ball I can play. And out of nowhere, Ole Miss pops up, and you know, it was almost like they say, when you know, you know. And the energy was just on point. Granted, like, you know, that it was a recruiter that was, you know, Coach McIntyre, Coach Mike McIntyre, he was just, it was amazing. And I just never forget, I went on my official visit to Tennessee, and I went on my my unofficial visit to Ole Miss, and I knew after I walked in that Walk of Champions, I didn't tell anyone, but I knew it was a couple of times. It was my second time in my life where I knew, they say, when you know, you know. I knew that I said, this is a school for me. And I said, again, if I had to do it all over again, I would go back to Ole Miss again and try to beat all those teams. So, God worked in mysterious ways. And if it was up to me, I would have went to Tennessee, but ultimately I'm glad I ended up at Ole Miss.
Blake Bedingfield, a former Titan scout here, I was talking to him about you getting ready for this. And he said only two, when Chris Johnson was in his prime, when he broke through, he usually geared down when he was heading on one of those long touchdown runs. Only two guys ever made him aware in the secondary that he had to maintain his top speed, Troy Polamalu and you. You remember chasing Chris Johnson and him maybe being surprised by your speed?
Oh my goodness! I think it might be the other way around. I won't lie to you. I do remember. We played. I think it was 2008. Takeo and I were inside linebackers together. And never forget that defense we had. A lot of people don't give us a lot of credit for that defense we had from that was a part of from 2007 to 2010 in our run defense that, yeah, we may not have had the best pass defense, but our run defense was pretty on point, and we had not allowed a 100-yard rusher. And I still don't think he had got 100 yards, but I'll never forget, we had a counter. They ran a counter, and I seen Chris Johnson on film run, and we always had our coaches say, don't overestimate your speed, but don't underestimate his. And to kill, he hit that counter. And I was supposed to be there a second. I was supposed to be there a little faster, but usually I can gauge and I can be like, all right, I'm gonna let them think that I'm not there. And as soon as they think they're gonna come out, I'm hitting them right at the moment that they cross that integrated across the yard line. And I never forget, I tried it with Chris Johnson, and he hit that little step on me. And I never forget, Spike Dog looked at me. He came back to the home. He said, "Cap, what happened? I hit it." I said, "Man, that sucker fast, man." I said, "He a lot faster than I thought." And so it was probably more the other way around. And him and I every now and then, I've joked with him before on Instagram. What gave him love on Instagram, I think he was showing a play, and I said, yep. I know that feeling where you think you got him, and all of a sudden he just slowly running on past you, and you're not catching up to him. So I appreciate him for sharing. I appreciate him for admiring my speed, but I most definitely admired his that much more.
Well, Patrick, as you look at your career, I mean, the numbers are outstanding that you put up during your time in San Francisco. As you reflect back on it, what are you most proud of about your career?
Man, as I reflect back on it, it would really just be having the will to not be denied, meaning that, you know, coming from, you know, a small town, coming from, you know, I don't want to say much and nothing, but just coming from my circumstance and my situation, and to be able to just stay focused and climb the rope and, you know, meet some great people along the way and play for a great organization, an organization that I remember as a kid saying I never, ever played for, you know, my day. So I said, boy, never say never, because I was a big Cowboys fan growing up. And to be able to go to San Fran and just make history, become a part of their history. It's just all truly, truly a blessing. And I just give all praise and glory to God.
Well, Patrick, appreciate so much you taking time to be with us. It's been a pleasure getting to talk to you today. And again, very kind for your time. Thanks so much. And good luck with things moving forward here.
Wish you the best of luck. I know you got a lot of support in that room, and you've got a hell of a career.
Hey, I really, really appreciate you all. And also thank you to everyone who supports and have followed my career and continues to believe in me. And I appreciate it all. And whether I ever get a chance to tell you in person or not, just know that I'm truly grateful and thankful.
Hey, you got to time up your trips to Tennessee a little better, and not come when it's when we've got ice.
Hey, you know what? I won't lie to you, but I would not. It was very tough to come here during this cold time. But I had I had received an award from the Star of Hope from the Community Foundation of Northwest Mississippi for being their Star of Hope this year, and so that's what brought me back to the South. And I'm in the right place. I'm where I need to be, because it's bringing back some memories as to why, like, when I was young, this cold weather, why I wanted to live where it was warm. And to get drafted to California, I'll tell you, man, it's been truly a remarkable journey to this point, and just truly grateful. So thank you all, and just thanks for having me.
The great, well deserved, I'm sure. Good luck.
The great Patrick Willis, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
We're innocent. And we stood strong and tall because we knew we were innocent. And I just like to point that out. And these guys are innocent. And yeah, overcome that. It wasn't that hard because we knew we were innocent. So, yeah.
It is that time of the day. Time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. A lot of talk about being innocent from Jim Harbaugh there, Joe. And he's found himself with a new job. I turn things over to you.
Yeah, this has got to be a quick one. So I'll make it quick. There's a lot of things we could get into here. We had, you know, Kaharski on there yesterday. Yeah. Very appropriate that Harbaugh takes the Chargers job yesterday with the, you know, he finally got an NFL offer. He took the NFL offer. He's been trying to get an NFL offer for 3 years, but he left Michigan with a natty. So good for him and them. And of course, that soundbite after winning it all is very interesting as we think about what he was asking Michigan to do contractually, which yes, was to somehow give him protections from all the punishment to come from all the cheating he did at Michigan. But here's the thing that came down late yesterday that was really fascinating. This went back and forth. Another thing I love about stuff like this, like there's some Michigan fan account that has a ton of followers that said he was in Ann Arbor. He was back in Ann Arbor yesterday and was like, oh, boy. And even some actual media folks are like, oh, you see, everybody talks about the Harbaugh stuff, and every year he comes back to Michigan. And then Diana Rossini puts out a tweet, yeah, Jim Harbaugh's still in Los Angeles, everybody. Calm down, basically. But in the meantime, some reporting came out, and this includes, I believe, my friend Angelique Changelis, who's covered Michigan forever for the Detroit News, had this first. So I'm going to read this about the contract that Michigan, in the last second, as he was about to sign with the Chargers, after weeks of not agreeing to this ridiculous, you know, try to give him protections from all the punishment. And let me read this paragraph. Quote, Harbaugh's attorneys who've been trying to work with Michigan to keep him in Ann Arbor said it took until the proverbial 11th hour on Wednesday for Michigan to give in on certain contract language. By then, it was too late. After months of Michigan rejecting the contract terms, his lawyers proposed in late 2023, a source with knowledge of the negotiations told the Detroit News that Michigan finally agreed to Harbaugh's proposal on Wednesday afternoon, when Harbaugh was already in the final stage of discussions with the Chargers. So, in the end, Michigan sold its soul and became an absolute for Harbaugh, and he left them anyway. That's a toughie, man. That is a toughie. And again, look, let's make it clear. Michigan is like anybody else in this, in this level of football where it's about winning and nothing else. Okay. So they're not any better or any worse than anybody else at the highest levels of college football, but it is amazing that they finally buckled on this. And also, I still need to know how that would work. Like, what would that actually do? I mean, if the NCAA came in and said, you know, show cause Jim Harbaugh, how does his contract protect him? I mean, I guess, you know, obviously we can protect him from penalties from Michigan. Yeah, yeah, like financial penalties, things like that. Suspended, he still gets paid. I'd love to see that. Actually, I assume we will get some open records details on that down the line. But in the end, Michigan totally buckled, and it didn't matter. Because when Jim Harbaugh finally gets an NFL offer, he was always going to leave for the NFL. So now he left him with a natty, whether it gets taken away or vacated or whatever, that the natty happened. They deserved the natty. They were the best team. And now we get the Harbaugh experience back in the NFL, which is going to be pretty freaking fascinating. By the way, Titans at Chargers next season.
Some people very excited to see Jim Harbaugh gone from Michigan, Joe, from what I hear.
Oh, you talking about the thing I sent you guys?
Yes, I am.
I'll read this. Sometimes things get a little. Now, Jim Comproni, friend of mine, he's covered Michigan State, SpartanMag.com. I think they're on three now. They were rivals forever. I'm going to read his tweet. Quote, college football is a sport, and sportsmanship in general has a chance to improve with hashtag Jim Harbaugh out of the game. He is a dishonorable man, and his program was a disgrace to college football for the past 3 years, end quote. Now, there's a top roper right there. Woo!
I love it. I also love the hashtag Jim Harbaugh on that tweet, too. That was good.
Yeah, I guess
it made me laugh.
I want to make sure that anybody searching Jim Harbaugh would come across that lovely endorsement of him. So, anyway, as PK said yesterday, he was going to the NFL. This contract thing I thought was ridiculous from the start, but they finally buckled just anything they could do to keep him. This is how college athletics goes.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. We'll get his thoughts on the hiring of Brian Callahan and all things NFL as well as we head into conference championship weekend. That's all coming up. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.